music got really big in a digital way when you were able to say thumbs up, thumbs down, I like that song. And suddenly these services would be able to come back to you and say, here's all these other things you're going to like, right? I don't know why I like Hey Jude. But I just love that song. So there's something in the attributes of that song that resonate for me. And Pandora and Spotify and SoundCloud and everyone else figured it out. And now I'm listening to all kinds of music that appeals to me because they found that attribute or those attributes in other songs.
Our journey to digital has enabled some truly disruptive changes over the past decade or so. It's completely transformed how we consume things like music, movies, books, and more by creating usage data that could feed complex algorithms. And those algorithms are what Spotify uses to tell you all the other songs you'd probably like if you happen to enjoy Hey Jude, and what Netflix uses to recommend the next movie you should watch. Of course, one area that has struggled to go digital in this manner is fashion. That's in part because, unlike the other areas I just mentioned, fashion hasn't typically had that kind of usage data on what each purchase is. Yet, as we're about to see, the fashion industry is finally starting to go digital in this way, with huge implications for this gigantic multi-trillion-dollar industry. Today, we're going to hear about how one company has built a data platform that's razor-focused on the fashion and apparel industry. I'm going to be talking to Bill Adler, the CEO of TrueFit, about how that company is completely revolutionizing fashion, bringing benefits to retailers, manufacturers, and consumers alike. Afterwards, in this week's bonus content, I'll be talking with Chris Moore, TrueFit's Chief Analytics Officer, about what it means to manage the incredible data set that Bill talks about. Yep, who knew what data might exist about a single piece of apparel? It's pretty amazing. It's going to be a great show, so stay tuned. I'm John Pryle, and welcome to the Impact Podcast. Bill Adler, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Great. It's great to be here and thrilled to join an illustrious group of people who've been doing these podcasts. We founded the company around 8 years ago. It was a pivot. It had initially been a B2C website called MyTrueFit. And then I, along with the original founders, pivoted it and turned it into a B2B data platform for the footwear and apparel retailers for the industry. And we did that a while ago, and it's been going great.
So you were talking a bit earlier about the music industry. Can you draw some comparisons between it and the fashion industry and help me understand who the players in fashion are and the touch points you have for providing value?
Fashion is four times bigger and much more decentralized. Fashion, I don't know how many musicians there are a year that create commercially scalable music, but fashion has about 11,000 to 12,000 designers, brands. Okay, it's massive. And everybody holds their data differently. And so the way this is going to work is by organizing the data, and then very simply, you know, so do all this heavy lifting behind the scenes, and then very simply make it easy for you, whether you're searching in Google for a little black dress. Like, all of this selection is really great, but what matters is, like, what is true to you, right? So if I'm searching at the top of the funnel, if I'm searching for something, or if I'm on a site, or if I walk into the store, you know, if I'm on my phone and I get an advertisement to kind of like buy something, it shouldn't be creepy and weird. It should actually be something that makes me like, wow, I can't believe they know that about me. I really do want to buy that. None of that happens right now in fashion, but it is beginning to happen. And our platform is enabling all of those other parties to be able to do that with more excellence.
I'm not sure what I hate worse, but having clothes that don't fit me, or I got to go through the process to return the clothes. And I can't believe retailers like that either.
Yeah, retailers don't like it because about 40% of all the things that you purchase online are returned. But the bigger problem, actually, you talk to the retailers, is that only 2% of the people that are shopping at a site convert. So 98% of the people who are even visiting a certain site or a mobile phone don't buy anything. And then of the 2% that do buy something, 40% of it is returned. So you have this constrained market that's clearly looking to unleash.
So the complexity, it's interesting, I'm trying to think of the parallel. So the complexity of understanding music or movies, there's a lot of complexities into what defines music that I might like, right? Once you tell me I'm not looking for a performer, I'm telling the system what I like and it figures out other performers like it. So obviously there's a lot of machine learning and AI in terms of making this work for you. Is this kind of the heart of the opportunity?
Yeah, it is. But, and you know this better than anybody. I mean, AI is an overhyped word already. And what does AI really mean? And the reality is that AI, machine learning algorithms, all of these powerful algorithms are effectively open source, right? Like Google open source TensorFlow and Amazon's versions of all their famous algorithms. These are all open, right? So AI has effectively become a commodity very quickly. So what's unique isn't really the algorithm. And it's certainly not computing power, because we all have a whole lot of that and it's very inexpensive. What's unique is what? It's the data set. It's what's underneath. The power of AI is powerful, driven by better data. So if you want to understand what outfits to create for you, I have to understand two things really well. I have to understand your preferences personally, and I have to understand all of these different attributes of the things that we think you're going to like. So what we did over the last few years was to structure on the garment side, the style side. By the end of this year, we'll have 70% of the global fashion market. That's a 70% of a $2 trillion market. All of the styles that make up that revenue, we're going to have that structured about 50 to 150 style attributes and fit attributes per style in our data set. So that, just so I understand, so you understand what that means. So, you know, this Uniqlo blue blazer that I'm wearing with the horse stitch here on the, I like this because it's got this thing called a horse stitch. So that's a detail that matters to me. I probably wouldn't buy this thing if it weren't for that. And there's more fundamentally simple things like, okay, yeah, it literally fits in my body because I wear a tall and that works for me. And I like this shade of blue, you know, versus a lot of other shades of blue. On the garment side, you structure all those attributes. Then on the consumer side, we have about 400 million unique profiles, 400 million people who have bought something that are on our platform, and we saw what they bought, and we were able to that from that use AI to derive the preferences of that person. So if you bought and kept and wear the shirt that you're wearing and you love it because you keep pulling it out of your closet, right? So there's something about the ones that are our go-to items. We keep pulling those out. Those are the ones you want to learn about, and you structure the preferences of the person who wears those successfully. So we did that for, we got about 400 unique users on the platform. And of that, 15% of them, 60 million, are logged in and opted in directly into our traveling network, which means we learn more about 60 million. We learn more about you because you tell us, you sign up at Under Armour, then you go over to Macy's and buy something. And then from Macy's, you go over to Ralph Lauren. And then from Ralph Lauren, you go over, to Ann Taylor and so on and so forth. And for that user group, we're learning a lot more because we're tracking and traveling for you. And I'll just close by saying what you do is you then take the power of AI to look at the relationships between those preferences and those attributes. And that's where the magic of great software comes from, because you can then show you very seamlessly, very simply, the things that you're going to love, and stop showing me all the things I'm not going to care about.
Exactly. So that's your value of the SaaS data set. And I love that you're going across the different silos of vendors. So I get consumers, you know, they're going to find the clothing that will fit them well. If they opt in, they really can even learn more. We talked earlier, and I think there's a lot of value to the merchants because hopefully they'll sell more and avoid returns. Now, some merchants are, you know, single brand. You mentioned Under Armour, or I was talking about Calvin Klein, or some are Macy's, like you mentioned. But take me to the value that you see at the manufacturer's level, who really are the ones that have these, you mentioned these 10, 11,000 designers working on these materials. The manufacturers obviously are a critical part of this operation you've got here. But just help me understand kind of why this is important to the manufacturers as they do their targeting.
Sure. I mean, the fundamental objective of a brand, a designer, is what? It's to design this thing and put it on the backs of people who are going to wear it, or the legs or whatever, right? You want people to wear your clothing. And you don't want it to sit in a warehouse and not be bought. And you don't really want someone to buy it and return it and have it going back and forth in UPS or FedEx box.
Yeah, and that is a particular problem around the holidays when there's always that big rush on returns and it crushes the post office and UPS and FedEx, you name it. And speaking of holiday shopping, I think that brings me to the big elephant in the room, which is...
But by the way, that's big. That's a big part of the answer too, is Amazon. I mean, Amazon built a $17 billion apparel business last year, and they're not even that good at apparel yet. right? And a big part of that is private label. So 11 or 12,000 brands are trying to make distinctive, beautiful designs and sell it to their wholesale partners like Macy's or build their own direct site themselves. They want to be successful doing that. They don't want to get drowned out. They don't want fashion to get commoditized by an Amazon who's really good or frankly, some of these other big retailers. And so what's in it for the brands is they also want to ship a lot of clothing and they want the premiumness of their brand to matter. So for them, the value prop is pretty simple. It's free and it's safe and simple for them to share the designs in our platform. Like we're a trusted third party in between the designer, the retailer selling that design and the consumer trying to buy it. So we sit in the middle and we're able to have that designer share that data with us in a way that's simple and we convert it to structured, normalized data. And that allows us to be able to provide recommendations for them on the retail site. So if, you know, Michael Kors shares that dress information with us, when you're shopping Macy's for the Michael Kors dress, we know much more about the dress. So therefore, their sell-through at Macy's is much higher. Returns are less. They have a better relationship with Macy's, better relationship with the consumer. And it didn't cost them a nickel from our perspective, right? And then secondly, we also have a dashboard of analytical insights that we provide back to them, which is pretty interesting stuff. Particularly if they're wholesalers and don't have a very robust direct-to-consumer business, they don't have a lot of information about who's buying their product, right? They just design it, and the only signal they have is a wholesale buy. Sales are up, sales are down on the wholesale side. But we are able to tell them, here's who bought it, the demographics of that person. We're able to tell them granular things like attributes by sales. This is your sales by sleeve length.
Isn't there also the time to value that I'll learn very quickly as a manufacturer that the horse stitch worked in this case and perhaps make more of that. At this particular point in time, this is something that's hotter. And I'll learn that very quickly versus sending people out to walk the stores or see what's selling or getting reports well after the fact, right?
Exactly. No, that's precisely right. It's very astute. So I think that's the other piece of it is that they're learning a lot about how their business operates. They're learning, therefore, how to make better product faster, right? You know, I'll give you an example. Topshop, which is a brand of ours, was entering the United States. We work with Topshop on their website, but they also sell wholesale to some retailers. So they're coming into the United States and they started getting some higher returns than they wanted. So we were the ones in between the retailer and Topshop and the consumer. We looked at the data with the retailer and the brand, and we were able to find out that the local variations of how things fit and some of the style attributes were a little different than they expected in the US by studying the data of who was buying it and who returned it and what happened. And we're able to give them three or four insights that allowed them to tweak their next run, which sold through much better.
Now you talked earlier, you mentioned about it all comes back. The only reason why this AI and ML working is actually because of the data. And you really do talk about being a data collective. So I think it's important for you to take us, if you don't mind, kind of the startup challenge. You know, how do you get the first or the first 10? How did you, I think many of our companies, our listeners will have to think about that issue of really gathering the data because obviously the data is the gold. How'd you do it? How'd you pull it off?
You have to start with a problem to solve. I think if you don't have a problem to solve, you're not going to build any sort of data platform or data collective. In this case, I had been a retailer and I was friends with retailers. So in talking, we all knew that the problem we had was very basic, which is it is hard to sell clothing and shoes online, right? It was hard 8 years ago. It's still hard. It's just fundamentally challenging. And there are a lot of reasons that it is hard. Some of them have been solved, like better photography. But fundamentally, if you start with the basics, consumers get to the bottom of that funnel. They're on a product page and they don't know if it's going to fit. And so you get all this abandonment there where people return a lot. And so you start with that problem. And I was sitting around talking to the president of Macy's. And I said, well, we've got a B2C site that's doing really well, but we're sort of interested in phasing down this B2C site. And use that learning, that data and algorithm set and the IP and give it to the retail industry. And that's how we thought about it. We thought there's a bigger opportunity here to try to make the entire retail industry come to a digital life than it is to create another competing site. And so Kent and I and went to some other retailers and said, hey, we're thinking about creating a data collective, and here's how we think it'll work.
So you started with the retailers who then carried multiple brands. You eventually evolved to the Michael Kors, but the way you started this data collective was actually Macy's and some of their peers. They're competitive, their peers, yes.
Exactly. The better data set to start with is a multi-brand site like a Macy's, because Macy's has brands and they have their own private label and they have lots of consumers and they have, but heterogeneous data sets are more interesting than homogeneous data sets. So it's more interesting from a data problem to get a whole bunch of different types of data if you're trying to learn about consumers and styles and the relationship between fashion and AI. And so between fashion and consumers using AI. And so we started there. We sent letters to all the brands and just said, we co-wrote these letters. Basically said, look, Truefit's going to be this data platform in the middle, trusted. We have vetted them, and we're now going to create a data platform. Here's what's going to happen. Macy's is going to contribute anonymized transaction data, right? We have no personal information that we're sharing here, but we're going to share the power of the transaction set. We're inviting you, the brand, to share your style design information with them, not with us. And that's a very important point. There's a whole frenemy relationship between the brands and the retailers. Okay. $2 trillion market, 55% of it is private label. So, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you're not being followed. It is true that the retailers are constantly trying to rip off those designs because they can get better margin selling something very similar under a different label, right? Anybody can go to a factory and make stuff. So it was very important given the dynamics of the industry to create a trusted third party in the middle, a Switzerland, if you will. And we made it very clear that there was a firewall, and we showed how there was a firewall. And it was very clear that retailers and 50 first brands said, okay, we'll do it. And they put their styles on there. And we were able to then go to Macy's and provide better recommendations. And we'd go back to the brand and say, you see, we got you a 6% lift in conversion and returns are down 20%. And then they would give us more data and they felt more comfortable. And then we, you know, it's an industry of references. And so people began to trust this at scale and so on and so forth.
There's a couple of tierings here. This is fascinating to me because we often think about, you know, the classic two-sided market. And, you know, the example is always the, you know, the Apple consumer buying apps and the developers making apps. And you have to win on both sides. This is actually interesting. We're only on one side of the market and you're bringing two very important piece parts together, which is I, the retailer, can give you transactional data. You, the manufacturing, can give me product data, and we both win on that. And then you reach out to the other side of the market and add the value down to the consumers. It's an interesting, I don't want to call it a bank shot, but there's a fascinating way that you had to pull this together.
Yeah, I think it just, again, everyone was feeling pain, right? And consumers, it just sucked buying clothing and shoes online. So they were like, yeah, I'll do it, sure. Manufacturers and brands were struggling with their own challenge. So they were happy to test it out, make sure that it worked for them. And retailers, of course, you know, they're trying to sell and they don't want to take the returns. So everyone kind of needed this. And I think we listened really carefully. And then I think it just scaled because the power of that data set produced better results, which then allowed us to create new products, like not just fit, now we can do style, now we're working on outfitting, now we're helping them with Google search. So you just continue to leverage, it's a give-get, right? So if they give, they get more back. And if you continue to do that, you know, then it continues to evolve. And the biggest, I think, accelerator to the whole thing, and this is true if you look at the size of the data and the power of what it does, is really the threat of Amazon. Amazon is a threat. In the last 18 months, that has become more visceral to retailers than it was. I think it was more in quiet chambers, in quiet rooms, it was a discussion constantly for the last 5-10 years. But you know, when the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times start publishing the so-called apocalypse of retail and all these store closings and Amazon, it became a visceral threat. And I think that accelerated a lot of adoption. And our platform, you know, grew, it tripled last year.
Fantastic. So let's do one quick peek into the crystal ball. This is something I've been expecting. And I think it was in today's paper that there are now robots that are cooking and flipping hamburgers. What do you think is going to happen in terms of humans and the brick and mortar retail sales experience?
I think that it will be part machines and part human. I think it will always be part machines and part human when it comes to clothing and shoes. I think the store formats will get smaller and more digital, and you'll have less clothing in the back room and stuff like that. But I still think there'll be places where you'll go. You'll have incredible experiences versus seeing a bunch of stuff on the racks. And fundamentally, just our homes will become places where all this information will come to us more seamlessly, whether it's through, you know, our phone or a laptop or a TV screen, if we still have those in the future. You know, I just think it'll start coming to us, right? That you'll be able to browse a dressing room, if you will, or a closet in a digital way that just isn't you going out to try to find all the things you want, but instead, you know, a helpful intelligence engine driven by us that seamlessly brings to you through various different ways all the outfits that are true to you and continue to expand your tastes, which is what we do, because then the market expands. And I think that will be true in your home. I think that'll be true in stores. I think stores are a very exciting future. I am not one that, I think the death of retail is greatly exaggerated. I think retail is getting smarter and better. I think a lot of really bad stores are closing. Debt was cheap in the last 20 years and a lot of overproduction happened. But what you're going to get now is really good stores, really good retailing, where you're going to want to go in there because it's going to be exciting and it's going to be different. And it'll be very much powered by intelligence so that you can experience more and more of the things that you're going to love. But I think the future is quite bright. I think the fashion industry is well positioned for a very robust future. And we're excited to be a platform that will help drive all that.
Bill Adler, CEO of TrueFit. Thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure is mine. Really great. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.